Embrace Your Beautiful Destiny, a show where we will talk about finding beauty in the most unconventional places in our lives. So every week, we'll talk about dealing with disappointment or overcoming frustration, and dealing with stuff that just gets under your skin and derails you. We'll also have amazing guests on here that'll be sharing their stories. So I'm your host, Shanna Strange. Let's dive in. Now, children, someone tell me about Noah. What did he do? My Sunday school teacher said as she squinted through her big, oversized glasses and tucking that one crazy hair behind her ear that always escaped. I sat neatly coloring my paper with a perfect five-color rainbow above the arc, careful not to color outside the lines of my rainbow. I needed it to be perfect. I daydreamed about how much fun Noah must have had with all those animals. I imagined running my hands across a zebra's back as he whinnied and he licked the salt from my hand. I thought about whistling to an exotic bird and it flew in for a perfect landing on my arm. I would teach my little bird words and commands and we would all live happily ever after in our boat, floating around the world. But my thoughts were interrupted by Oscar shouting, "Oh, I know! He built a big old boat!" with fruit punch dribbling down his chin and animal cracker crumbs all over his face. He struggled to compose himself as if he would explode if he didn't tell the rest of us that exciting piece of information. "That's right," my teacher said, placing the felt cutout of the ark on the flannel board next to Noah while simultaneously shoving the stringy hair back into place. I thought Noah looked like a happy guy. He had long gray hair and a matching scruffy beard, but he had kind eyes that seemed gentle and warm. He reminded me of my grandpa, like I could just go sit on his lap and he would teach me how to put a worm on a hook or something. I liked this safe story about Noah and his boat. I liked all the Sunday school stories we learned. And they were just that, stories to me, kind of real, but mostly fictional to my childlike mind. I saw safe, cute visions of Daniel petting sweet lines as he talked to them about how his day was going, or Jonah sliding down the whale's throat like a water slide in an amusement park. Everything seemed safe and happy, warm and sunshiny. My Bible heroes lived in the same imaginary world as Alice, the Cheshire Cat, and the Mad Hatter, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty. They were all full of bright colors and extraordinary costumes, but they weren't full of too much pain and suffering. I suppose I created an imaginary world for myself, too, with all of my inflated dreams. I wanted the same kind of experience as those felt Bible characters had in their cute Bible stories, or an experience like my fairy tale characters. I wanted an adventure that projected me to a glorious destiny, not stripped me bare and revealed my flaws. And I certainly didn't want to wake up in a prison. Not a real prison, rather, a supernatural prison of sorts. But it happened to me, so I needed to decide what to do with my experience. Somehow or another, I believed Bible stories were the same as fairy tales. But after landing in a providential prison, I learned that fairy tales are not the stuff that real destiny is made of. For sure, they do teach great morals and entertain us, but they cannot be our template that we hold our lives against to measure things. If we go through life with fairy tale glasses on, we will be sorely disappointed at almost every turn. Because sometimes the glass slipper doesn't fit. Sometimes Prince Charming isn't the one for us. And sometimes the dragon we were supposed to slay maims us. But that's okay, because even though this isn't a fairy tale, it doesn't mean that God is not still behind the scenes working this thing out. Providence is still at work. God's guiding hand is orchestrating events that we have no idea about, and in such a way that when we end up in a pit or a prison, it is still a place of supernatural abundance. When we finally begin to see through the natural, through the facade of death and decay of this world, and we begin to see the sovereign hand of God in our life, we realize just how amazing this journey with Him is and how truly alive we are. We realize that this life is only a practice run for the one to come. We are merely learning who God really is and that our identity is hidden in Him. I think our journey of destiny is more like the story of the Count of Monte Cristo. I hope you guys have read this or watched the movie. It was written by Alexandre Dumas. Instead of a fairy tale, his life was more like a nightmare that God ended up redeeming at the end. It's a story about betrayal, wrongful imprisonment, and the ultimate character transformation of the protagonist, Edmond Dantès. Through a series of horrible events, Edmond ends up in prison in one of the worst places in the world, the Château d'If, a notorious prison where all of the innocent people spent their days. These were the people that the government knew they were innocent. They knew the government knew they were innocent, but they needed to cover up a conspiracy or something malevolent. The Château d'If reeked of foul smells, cruel prison wardens, rotten food, and dank cells. Prisoners were tortured, beaten, and half-starved. Edmond found himself there among the other misfortunate souls. He spent the first half of his 13-year tenure there depressed and suicidal. He continually attempted to take his life unsuccessfully. His once optimistic view of God and life faded like the prom dress hanging in my closet the last 20 years. He gave up. That is until he met someone that helped change his perspective and ultimately changed his life. Edmond met the priest in the prison. The priest was an old man that looked a lot like the wizard from The Lord of the Rings, with long flowing hair and a grandfatherly aura. He carried himself with an air of refinement despite his crappy situation. Edmond convinced the priest to teach him everything he knew about combat skills and to educate him. Edmond grew up poor and never received an education, and the priest was highly educated and knew combat skills. Edmond soon became brilliant, spoke multiple languages, and solved complex problems. He mastered the art of sword fighting and trained intensely, using the limited resources of the prison. Over a period of 7 years, Edmond transformed into a powerful force. In my favorite scene of the movie, the priest reminds Edmond of a great truth, one that he had forgotten. And now, Edmond, this is your final lesson. After you get out of here, do not commit the crimes for which you now serve the sentence. Remember, God said, vengeance is mine. But I don't believe in God, priest. But the priest said, it doesn't matter, Edmond, he believes in you. God believes in you, even when you no longer believe in yourself. Actually, I want to use a closely connected word to believe. It's confidence. It doesn't matter that you feel like a complete failure when you wake up in prison. God is still confident in you and your worth to Him. He regards you in high esteem and is still betting on you even though you are the underdog. It doesn't matter that your life seems like an episode of The Biggest Loser, but not in a good way. Not because you lost a ton of weight and you won the game. No, it feels like you are on the star of the show because you truly are the biggest loser on the face of the earth. Yet God still believes in you, and He proves it by loving you madly. I felt like the biggest loser known to man. I tried and failed so many times at this dream thing. Yep, I was a loser, and no one wanted to talk to me. Everybody always wants to interview the Olympic winners of events or artists who won American Idol. But no one ever cares about the losers. You don't ever turn on the TV and the headline reads, live interview with the fourth place American Idol contestant. Nope, nobody cares, right? Everybody wants to know, how did the winner do it? Did they spend hours training every single day of their lives, forsaking all human relationships, eating ramen soup for every meal, and listening to self-help teachings in their sleep? Because deep down, we all want to be number one in something. And honestly, it doesn't even matter what that something is to us. Just being number one in something justifies our existence in some minuscule way in our own eyes. It makes us feel like we actually are more than just a speck of dirt on a planet in a galaxy that is one of billions of galaxies in the universe. Until we end up in a prison, we don't realize that this unhealthy way of viewing ourselves is the thing that is driving us on every day to enter one more talent competition. or spend countless hours rehearsing for a one-act play part in high school that we desperately need to justify ourselves. You know, maybe it shows up differently for you. Perhaps you keep trying over and over to impress someone because you desperately want their attention. Maybe you're tired of being single and your number one is finding someone to marry. Your number one is romance, and you can't stop watching Pride and Prejudice over and over, hoping that maybe if you try harder, you will impress that guy enough that he will look your way. And finally, when he looks your way and sees how amazing you are, he'll have no choice but to fall to his knees and propose. And finally, you will be number one. You will matter. Maybe it isn't romance for you. You're obsessed with that perfect career you dreamed about when you were six. But as it turns out, you're stuck working at a convenience store and you're a single mom. You had to drop out of college when your husband left you for another woman. Now your days are spent mopping floors, changing diapers, reheating frozen dinners, and asking customers if it's cash or credit. But still, you think if you could just finish college, you would be important. You would make more money, be respected, and you would matter. Prison has a way of making you face the number one question. It did for me anyway. When I no longer could use my accolades to justify my life, I landed on my butt like you do when you fall down a flight of stairs with nothing to break your fall. You know the kind of fall that messes your back up for weeks or possibly years and causes lingering problems the rest of your life. But God was waiting for me at the bottom of those stairs. He picked me up, dusted me off, and told me he believed in me. He told me he loved me, and I was his number one. What? That probably seems shocking to some, to presume that you are that important to God. But it's true. The same God that created the entire universe just by saying, "Let there be light," and the same God that has no beginning and no end, is totally, completely, and hopelessly in love with you. He can't help himself. The beauty is that we are all number one to God. We just don't realize it. We think we have to earn his love, his approval, and his attention. So we set about devising ways to get that coveted attention. We unconsciously transfer this talent competition mentality to our relationship with God, thinking that if we are good enough, he will love us and we will be number one to him. But he doesn't agree to our subtle attempts to manipulate his love because it doesn't have to do that. He's already proven his love to us by coming in the form of a man to be the greatest sacrifice for all of us. He doesn't need our greatest achievements to appease him and to make him love us. He already does. He just wants us to accept it. Sometimes we are so steeped in performance mode that we are too busy to receive this incredible love and favor into our lives. I believe that is when God steps in and orchestrates a providential prison for us. He cannot allow us to go through life misunderstanding the most important revelation of all, that this incredible love he has for us is not founded on our works or achievement or on something we can do for him. It is solely based on him and his goodness. Prison for me was not about a specific geographical location that God confined me to. The prison sentence I served was a series of confining situations in my life that limited my freedom and my choices. It did involve working at horrible bank jobs, but it also involved some very painful moments in which I could not be free to be myself. I could not actively pursue my destiny because of the financial constraints placed on our lives. Prison for me reduced my ability to freely create art, and for an artist, there's no worse place to be on the earth. An artist that doesn't create is a ticking time bomb. With each passing dull day, toxicity seems to replace colorful expressions. It's almost as if the creativity is replaced with poison when it's not released. Enough of that poison, an artist will detonate a nuclear bomb of pain and frustration. Their insides burst out in a desperate cry for help. It is not a free situation. I experienced a couple of those explosions. I did not have time to create art because I worked all of the time. When I was not working, I had wife and mother duties to attend to on a daily basis, and my weekends were full of errand running, volunteering on the worship team at our church. Most Sundays, I spent about 7 hours volunteering at church. I didn't have any spare time to devote to pursuing the dream I felt God had put inside of me. I felt chained to my job. The monotony of it attempted to drag me back into the muck of depression again. I'd already visited the pit of depression. I just didn't want to go back. I felt trapped. Not only a job I couldn't escape, but a broken heart that had no song anymore. Waking up in a prison did not fit the grand destiny that I envisioned God wanted for me. But something incredible began to transpire in this uncomfortable place for me. I couldn't create or spend my time the way I wanted or pursue my destiny, but I could spend time with Jesus, and I surely couldn't participate in the circus act of performance-based relational living with God anymore. You know, I just didn't have the time or energy to keep up the charade. I just wanted something real, an experience that could continually carry me through my incarceration season. I didn't care about being a monkey in a circus act for God anymore. I knew that He honestly didn't need anything from me. He just wanted to spend time with me, like every single day. He didn't care if I had a song for Him or colored an amazing picture. He just wanted me to show up every day. Was that too much to ask? The circus life. So my daughter is gorgeous. She's absolutely beautiful. She actually looks a lot like her dad. She's blessed with beautiful, thick, blonde hair and huge blue eyes. She's ridiculously photogenic. Her Sweet 16 pictures look like something on the front of a teen magazine, and I gasped when I saw them. She is gorgeous. Now imagine if my blue-eyed baby girl didn't realize how beautiful she was. So she decided to start dressing up every day like a clown because she noticed the clowns get a lot of attention. She thought that if she dressed up like a clown and painted her face that way, maybe people would like her more and God might even love her. Now imagine that she realizes that in order to keep up the charade, she needs to do more. Not only does she need to dress the part, now she needs to incorporate some kind of circus act into her life. She decided to buy a unicycle and learn how to ride it. It's difficult, but she learns how to ride it, and people start to notice what an amazing talent she has. But not long after that, her popularity starts to fade. I mean, after all, there's so many clowns that ride unicycles, so what, you know? She desperately realizes she needs to add something else to the circus act. So she decides to learn to juggle while she's riding the unicycle. It's the hardest thing she's ever tried before, but with countless hours of practice, she masters it. The audience is astonished, for a little while anyway. She realizes she is losing the applause, so she decides to learn the most dangerous and difficult feat of all, riding a unicycle while juggling balls on a tightrope that is 20 feet in the air. She barely sleeps or eats and never has time to spend with friends or family. Her whole life is about practicing this skill. She wakes up at 4 a.m. every day to get in a couple of hours of practice before school. At school, she daydreams about what corrections she needs to make on her routine. She goes home straight after school and works on it until dinner time, day after day. That is, until she notices her hair begins to fall out because she isn't hardly eating. She's on anxiety meds because she is a nervous wreck and she's dropped 25 pounds. Her once beautiful mane of hair is now stringy and dull, and her beautiful blue eyes are now cloudy and sad. This is what many of us unknowingly do to ourselves day after day and year after year. We layer ourselves with makeup, costumes, and attempt impossible feats in an effort to make God and people love us. It's an exhausting balance act, and at some point, we cannot keep up the charade. Everyone reaches their limit differently, but eventually, we all reach the critical overload limit. Prisons help us get there faster. It's honestly a blessing in disguise because God is saying, "You don't have to pretend anymore. Here, let me remove the distractions and the people so you don't have to perform. Just be yourself. And spend time with me. As you do, I'll strip off the ugly clown makeup and costume. I just want to love you if you'll let me." when we live our life for the applause of a cheering mob, we end up at their mercy. Sometimes we end up seeing God as a judge on American Idol instead of a father. He becomes part of the mob that may cheer our name one moment and throw stones at us the next. But the prison helps to clarify his role in our life and our identity in him. As he strips the layers away, we return to a child sitting in his lap as he reads us a bedtime story or sings us a lullaby. No more costumes or clown makeup, no more pretending. We are simply his child, and there are no strings attached. He loves us. Friends, one thing you must do in a prison sentence is to quit the circus act. Stop being a willful participant in performance-based living. Using your gifts to impress God and solicit people's approval is unhealthy and will keep you caged to insecurity and fear. Circuses are full of people with uncommon talents, but they are usually misfits among society. They are usually the people that are orphans and loners, the people that society could not accept. So these misfits develop their uncommon talents for money so they could survive. They are missing the relational component of intimacy and family. They perform their circus acts for money because they feel they must. The only way they feel accepted is by gaining the applause of the same people that refused to accept them. But that's not who we are. We belong to God. He is our loving Father, and we are His children. We do not have to become acrobats or circus performers to attract His love. We can be ourselves, and He loves that. Prison has a way of stripping back the layers and years spent pretending to be someone else and uncovering our true inner person. So let's talk a little bit about Joseph's prison sentence, or his providential prison. So Joseph served a 14-year-long prison sentence for a crime he didn't commit. How fun would that be? Actually, to be more specific, Joseph served a prison sentence because he did the right thing. So let me just read. This is Genesis 39:19-20. When his master heard the story his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. So imagine being tossed into a cold and dark prison cell with no sunlight, running water, and very little food. You were thrown into the dungeon, which is an especially awful place within the prison itself. Think Chateau d'If again. Every day, a constant barrage of foul smells and rotten food awaited you. The last little bit of freedom you enjoyed at Potiphar's house just abruptly vanished from your life with no hope of ever returning. The only thing you do have going for you is the warden likes you, and God is still with you, blessing you in the weirdest of situations. You were thrown into this pit because you showed extraordinary character. It's not fair, and you hate it. You just want out. That's definitely one way of looking at it, but honestly, that viewpoint seems pretty full of despair and hopelessness. But what if you somehow put on your providential glasses and things started to look different? Maybe something like this. Imagine the hardest test you have ever taken in your life. Maybe it was an algebra or statistics test. You found the test extremely difficult, but you somehow managed to pull off an A. In fact, you did so well on the test that the principal of the school asked you to join the elite group of mathematicians at the school to compete at the area competition. So you agree to join. At the competition, you do so well that you win first place in your division and advance to the state level. The stakes are getting higher and it's definitely more intense. You keep practicing and preparing, and an amazing mentor seeks you out to help you. Every day after school, the two of you meet and he shows you the tricks and tips of being a mathematician and working out the most difficult problems. So the day finally arrives and you compete at the state competition and you win it. You are the best mathematician in the state of Texas. When you began the journey, you had no idea that you could be a champion. That seems like such an accomplishment, right? First place in the entire state. Are these stories really so different, honestly? Both of them are about test. A It's just a matter of perspective. The truth is, Joseph woke up in a prison because he passed another test. Actually, he passed a series of tests, not just passed the test, he aced them. God rewarded Joseph by saying, okay, I think you have more in you, let's keep going. That is exactly what he does to us too. Just when we think we're about to get out of a difficult situation, we sometimes end up in a worse one. Could it be that God is saying, well done, next lesson? It's not what we want to hear, but it is the only way we will grow. He sees the potential. He knows it's there, and the only way to expose it is to create those environments that cause it to surface. So be encouraged when you seem to encounter one test after another and you end up in a confining prison sentence. God deems you ready for that next season. He knows you have it in you to be a champion, and he won't stop until he gets you there. There is too much at stake here. I know it seems like a demotion on the surface, but remember, God wants to strip us of our self-serving motives and fleshly ambitions that would only undermine the true will of God. The daily grind of being hidden and broken are great tools for cultivating a deep humility in us. Being in the spotlight won't do that for us. People's applause won't do that for us. Only a situation that crucifies our flesh provides the environment we need to become the person that can sustain a powerful destiny. That is the reason God can say, I believe in you, with great confidence. He knows deep down under the circus act and the years of pretending that we unconsciously took part in is the real us, the true inner person that is connected to God. This is the recreated us, the one that was born into existence the moment we received God's salvation. But the only way for the true us to emerge is for the old us to die, and death is a slow, painful process for us. Joseph needed to die to the flashy, arrogant person that pretended to be the circus star with the fancy coat. He needed the prison to strip him of all false identities and create a deep dependence on God. And somehow, in the middle of being humbled, still realized God believed in him. He could never convince his brothers to believe in him, but in prison, he learned God believed in him. So remember this when you're in a prison. You aren't waiting on God. He's waiting on you. You aren't waiting for the opportunity to outwit circumstances so that you can, you know, successfully remove yourself from a prison sentence. You're waiting on your character to line up so that God can open those doors for you to move out of that prison sentence. But you have to remember when you're in a prison to let the Spirit of God lead you and to surrender to it. Just like Joseph did. You know, there's a point in time where in his story, it has been a while. I mean, the baker and the butler came and they had dreams and Joseph interpreted the dreams. But the Bible says that it was 2 full years before Pharaoh calls for him, even though in his own mind he has probably orchestrated a way of escape. But God said, no, you need two more years, Joseph, in this prison. And so sometimes that's what it's like. Sometimes we can see what looks like an escape, but God says just a little bit longer. And I want to encourage you, if you are in a place where you've been in that prison for a long time and you really want to get out, but God's saying just a little bit longer. I hope that today's chapter that I read to you called Providential Prisons will give you some hope, give you some perspective about, you know, why you're there, but what you can be doing while you're there. Because, you know, it's not fun and games for sure, but it is so necessary and it's actually a beautiful place. There's definitely beauty in prison. You just have to look a little bit harder. So I hope this message blessed you. I will see you guys next week. Hey friends, thank you for showing up for today's episode. I wanted to take a second and tell you about my book, Providence, Embrace Your Beautiful Destiny. So when God gives you a dream, it doesn't come with a manual, does it? At first, excitement and longing for that dream can drive you. But if you don't understand God's process of preparing you for the dream, you can travel a disappointing, discouraging, and confusing path. And here's the thing, dreams inspired by God require intense seasons of refinement, perseverance, and character development. Whatever you must endure to reach His dream for you is outweighed by the glory of being changed by God in the most uncommon ways. So I'd love for you to have this book in your hands. There's a couple of different ways you can get it. You can go to my website, shannastrange.net. Or you can go to Amazon and just look up Providence, Embrace Your Beautiful Destiny, and you'll find it. It's in digital form, or you can order a hard copy. Thanks, and I'll see you next week.